I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Congress is back in session with a Republican majority in both houses. And one of the first things on the agenda is a renewed attack against the Affordable Care Act. And the Supreme Court is set to rule on a case that threatens a major piece of the law. Jay Hancock of Kaiser Health News briefs us on those challenges. Up front, we're joined by Carolyn Quatrochi, head of the Maryland Health Connection, which has enrolled more than 160,000 Marylanders in health insurance ahead of the February 15th deadline. In fact, second-year enrollment numbers have already outpaced last year's totals. A look at year two of the Maryland Health Exchange. That's ahead on Midday. First, the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here, welcoming you again. Thanks for tuning in and making Midday part of your day here on WYPR, WYPF, WYPO, and streaming live online through WYPR.org. In the second hour of our show today, we'll be talking about bicycle safety in Baltimore City. Very important topic, highlighted by the recent death of Tom Palermo on a bicycle in North Baltimore. We'll be joined in the second hour by a couple of advocates for bicycle safety, improvements to the infrastructure in Baltimore City for the growing number of bicyclists here in Baltimore and throughout Maryland. That's in the second hour of our show. In the first hour, we're talking about health insurance, Obamacare, the second year of the Affordable Care Act. The 2015 legislative session in Washington commenced this week, as you know, and already President Obama and the now Republican-controlled Congress, both houses, are preparing for battle. And predictably, one of the first fights will be about the Affordable Care Act, the ACA. One of the primary goals of the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, is an all-out repeal of Obamacare. We've heard this before. It's still here with us. And also in March 4th, as a matter of fact, the United States Supreme Court will hear a challenge to the law that could threaten a major piece of the Affordable Care Act. A little bit later on in the show, we'll be hearing more about those two things from Jay Hancock of Kaiser Health News, who'll be joining us to talk about those challenges. But right up front, I want to say hello to Carolyn Quatrochi, Executive Director of the Maryland Health Connection. The latest enrollment period for health insurance under the law ends February 15th, and already Maryland's Health Exchange has signed up more people than it did last year, when, of course, the exchange had a disastrous rollout. Carolyn Quatrochi, welcome to the show. Nice to have you with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
It's a busy time. It has been since November when the new enrollment period started. But so thank you for making time for us.
Sure.
So let's see where we are. I guess anything's an improvement over last year. But where are you today in terms of people who've, I guess, what should I ask you about? Total enrollment since November 1st? Let's start with that.
Yes, November 15th was when it began.
15th, okay.
Yeah. Although we had browsing that opened up before the 15th, but that's when people could begin enrolling. So we've done very well so far. We're extremely pleased with the number of Marylanders who've come and enrolled, have visited the website, may still be thinking about it. We have over 160,000 people already who have enrolled in some kind of health coverage, either Medicaid or a qualified health plan. Breaking down that number, about 70,000 in Medicaid and about 88,000 in qualified health plans.
And how does that compare to how we ended, April 1st last year, 2014?
On the QHP side, the qualified health plan side, we've already exceeded our total enrollment as of the end of March last time. We had about 81,000 qualified health plan enrollees at that point, and we have 88,000 today.
Okay. And the total, including the Medicaid enrollment?
The Medicaid enrollment was actually much larger than was anticipated last year. So I think by the end of, I can't quite remember what the number was at the end of March, but by the time the second open enrollment rolled around, we had about 460,000 total and you know, all but 81,000 were Medicaid.
Were Medicaid. Okay, that number 88,000, now does that include people who had to re-enroll this year? Does everybody have to re-enroll? How does that work?
That includes both folks who are renewing the plan that they purchased last year through Maryland Health Connection, as well as newcomers. So it reflects what the way it's worked this year is, if you had a Maryland Health Connection plan or a plan that you bought through Maryland Health Connection with one of the carriers, CareFirst, Kaiser, et cetera, we encouraged everyone to go back through the system and re-enroll either in that plan or another plan through our new system so that they would get into the new system. There were two main reasons for that. The first being, we wanted them to make sure they had the right amount of financial assistance. They may have had an income change or job change, something like that. There are new plans with new rates, so that was important. And also, we have 52 plans, I think, this year, 55 maybe, up from last year. So a lot of new plans. So we want people to make sure that they're in the right plan for themselves and their families. So we encourage them all to come back through. Now, despite all the letters and emails and phone calls that we sent to people, to get them to come back through, some people didn't. And so those folks were automatically renewed by their carrier into the same plan.
So they weren't dropped.
They just
stayed in the plan they signed up for last year.
Yeah, the catch there is that they do not continue to get their financial assistance up front. Now, they were renewed into an exchange plan, so at the end of the tax year, next year when they file their taxes, they can recoup that money. But most people need the help up front, and to pay their premium every month.
I wanted you to explain that to our listeners, because we passed one deadline already. The final deadline is February 15th,
right.
sign-up. But in mid-December, there was another deadline that affected tax credits for people, right?
Well, what that deadline was about, December 18th, that was the last day to sign up for coverage, either as a renewal or a new enrollee, for that coverage to begin and the financial assistance to begin on January 1st.
I see.
So if you break it up, the folks who are already in coverage, their coverage would continue, but their financial assistance would not unless they re-enrolled by December 18th. For newcomers, the coverage itself begins January 1st and the financial assistance.
I see. Okay. So people who signed up by December 18th were able to get some upfront help.
Right.
In terms of the cost of the health insurance plan. Did you get a lot of complaints from people about new plans that they had to sign up for that they claimed were more costly than the previous plans they had?
We have not had a lot of complaints. One of the terrific aspects of the Affordable Care Act is the affordable part, and the fact that it makes these really substantial, in many cases, substantial financial subsidies, tax credits available to people. There's financial assistance, and then the rates themselves. There's been some movement up and some movement down. Some are higher, some are lower. But overall, when you look across the country, we were very pleased that our rates are quite low as compared to the rest of the country.
But there were some people who said, my old plan was fine. Yeah. You made me upgrade. President Obama said, if you liked your plan, you could keep it. It turns out that wasn't true.
Yeah.
My plan wasn't adequate under the standards of the Affordable Care Act, so I had to sign up for something I didn't want or need, and it cost me more money. I'm sure you've heard that.
We have heard that. The way it all affected someone depends on where they started, but there was a very good reason why plans are now made to cover certain benefits and certain prevention, vaccines and other preventive screenings. People in the old days, before all this went into effect, often thought they had insurance that would be there for them when they finally needed it, and then found, to their surprise, that it really didn't cover what they needed, the level of, certain drugs, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the effort here was to make sure that, when you put all this money and effort into making sure you have insurance for yourself and your family, that it means something when you get sick and it really gives you what you need.
Yes, and that actually might make you healthier, too, in terms of the preventive side of things, right?
Absolutely. There's so much cost in healthcare, as we all know and talk about, and a lot of this law tries to get at that. But one of the reasons why we spend so much on health care is that people who don't have insurance or access to good health care let conditions go and illnesses go longer until they're harder to treat and more expensive to treat and don't catch them in the first place or don't stay healthy in the first place. So you're absolutely right. The Affordable Care Act requires carriers to cover certain kinds of preventive care at no cost, so it does not go towards a deductible or anything else when people go to access that kind of care.
You're listening to Midday. Dan Rodrick's here with Carolyn Quatrochi, who is Executive Director of the Maryland Health Benefits Exchange. Is that right? That's the official title.
Yes.
People know it as the Maryland Health Connection. If you have comments or questions, please give us a ring while Carolyn is with us. 410-662-8780. What has your experience been like with the Health Exchange? Health Insurance Exchange in Maryland's this time during this enrollment period. Our midday email address, you can send in a question that way too, is midday@wypr.org. So we just back up a little bit here. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year the state had a terrible time with the software that was put in place to get the exchange up and running, because you know that very well, intimately. It was called a disaster, called a debacle.
Over and over again.
Yeah. Somehow we got through that year, even with signing up 460,000 people, nonetheless. So a new system went into operation in early November. I'm sure you had your fingers a little bit crossed on this. But it's in the main, it's working okay. People are able to sign up, choose insurance online without talking to a navigator, just get it all done online in the main?
Yes, it is working very well. The vast majority of our enrollments are done online. Many consumers do it completely by themselves. The application itself is more consumer-friendly and intuitive than last year, you know, even if last year's had been working better. And, you know, when you say we're our fingers crossed, of course, you know, when you're getting ready for a big launch of something like that, your fingers are crossed on some level. But on the other hand, we knew it was going to work.
Worked in Connecticut.
It was a proven system. It had worked in Connecticut. We under the leadership of Secretary Fitzgerald, she was terrific in exercising a lot of discipline about, you know, making minimal changes for this year at least to make sure we are ready on time. And then they did just testing out the wazoo, you know, all kinds of testing of the system before it went online. So we were pretty confident.
And Carolyn, you said there were 55 plans in place.
Yes.
55 plans to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing to me. That seems like a lot of choices that might even confuse people. But in terms of other exchanges, compared to other exchanges, state exchanges, I mean, Maryland sounds like it has a pretty competitive market for insurance.
Well, we were pleased that we had a new carrier come into the individual market this year, Cigna. So we now have 5 carriers. And I don't hold me to that precise number. It may be 52, it may be 55,
okay,
but it's around there. I think it varies across the country, Dan, in terms of how many plans are offered on each individual state exchange. But I don't think, the board, a couple years ago, I remember, was really looked at that question, you know, how much choice is too much choice, and as you say, becomes confusing.
Mm.
On the other hand, we really do, you know, consumers and families, they have very different needs, and so we wanted there to be a wide range of plans, different prices, you know, different networks.
Report in the Daily Record, I'm sorry, the Baltimore Business Journal, and late last month said that about 80% of folks are choosing Care First. Is that about right?
The latest numbers I looked at, that was about right. That's different from last year. It shows some movement in the market that.
Last year was what? It was even higher than 80%.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So you know, we still have almost half of the open enrollment period to go. So we'll have to see how all that shakes out.
Has the state, in terms of what the state is spending, in terms of staff to do this
mm-hmm.
year? How does it compare to last year? I was interested in the navigators, for instance. How many have we had to, because the software is working, required more hiring of staff?
The staff at the exchange itself is pretty lean and has remained about the same. The connector entities, the navigators and assisters, who are really our boots on the ground, we are funding them at about the same level as we did last year. And I think their staffing levels are comparable to last year. Their job is incredibly important, and they've just done a tremendous job. I mean, last year, with all of the challenges, they were able to adjust and really help people despite all the challenges. And then this year, you know, as you may have heard, we've had a real focus on enrollment fairs. We found at the end of last year, we tried it sort of late in the game last year and realized that people, despite the fact that it's easier online and very consumer-friendly, it's still a complicated decision to purchase insurance for families.
If you haven't done it before,
right? Particularly if you haven't done it before. And so we found that people really do appreciate having a place to go when they're off work on Saturdays, in-person assistance, sit down like we are, you know.
I'm curious, are people going to get health insurance? I know we have to take a break here. Maybe you can answer this after the break. Are they going to get health insurance because they know they need health insurance and it's available now, or because there might be a tax penalty? I wonder about that. Can you answer the question after the break?
Yes,
okay,
certainly.
Good. All right. This is my question for Carolyn. What's yours? Carolyn Kotrocki, Executive Director of the Maryland Health Connection, the Maryland Health Benefits Exchange. 410-662-8780 is our number. Sometimes I forget it. If you have a question for Carolyn, you can also send, as I said, an email, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back. Dan Rodericks here with Carolyn Kotrocki, Executive Director of the Maryland Health Connection, getting an update on health insurance enrollment this year with a new and better exchange in place. So my question, what's getting people out to those health insurance fairs, getting people to come in and sign up, getting people to go online and sign up? What's motivating them? Are their friends warning them they might have a tax penalty? Are their employers telling them go out and get insurance? What's motivating them?
You know, I think the tax penalty figures into it somewhat. But, Dan, I honestly, when you see people showing up in droves at these enrollment fairs and the level of enrollment we've had this year, and this is consistent with what we're seeing across the country, I think people just really need it. You know, I mean, people don't choose to have health insurance for because they don't, you know, they don't get sick or they don't need it. And so it's been very gratifying to see folks showing up at these fairs. And, you know, one worker was telling me, you know, you see people coming right from their jobs. You know, they still have their, you know, convenience store, you know, uniform on, and they come and they're able to, for the first time in their lives, many of them have that, you know, peace of mind. I mean, people are often one paycheck away from, you know, a real financial disaster if they get a serious illness. And so, you know, the tax penalty is there, and it's there for a reason, and it will increase year by year. So, you know, people who, you know, think it's not a big deal this year, in a few years they may feel it more. So that's certainly a reason to get it, but it's much more important to get it, and I think people really are the wave that we've seen of interest in this reflects the fact that people need health insurance.
Are we seeing the young invincibles, the millennials, or even younger coming in, those who are no longer 26 years old, 27, 28 years old, no longer on their parents' plan?
Yeah, we are, and we're really pleased by that. We have almost 30% of our enrollments so far are under age 35. Well, between 18 and 35, the number goes way up if you count kids. But between 18 and 35, and what we saw last year, actually, as I know from having kids in their 20s, you know, they maybe are, a lot of them wait till the last minute. So we saw more young people sign up in the last part of the open enrollment season last year than in the first part. So So that number, that percentage may even go up.
Let's take some calls for Carolyn Kotrocki, 410-662-8780. And I have a couple of emails to read. We'll start with Vince in Perry Hall. Welcome to Midday, Vince. Go right ahead, please.
Thank you. You know, as a insurance industry professional over the last 40 years, we saw the disappearance of mental health care as a covered illness. The significant things that the Affordable Care Act does is reinstall mental health care as a covered illness first dollar. So, you know, it's an amazing turnaround. And I think that part of the affordable health care improvement in coverage has not been really discussed. Most people have no idea that health care benefits are now part of the equation for new health plans. So I think that's a great thing. And there are many other aspects that add coverage that was not part of existing health care programs. So I wanted to offer that comment and get your opinion on that.
Yeah, thank you very much, Vince. We did discuss that with Dr. Mark Comrade, who's a psychiatrist who visits our show from time to time.
I couldn't agree more. In fact, I appreciate the point because I should have made it myself in talking about why the improvements and you know, the feeling that plans cover more benefits, that is one of the most important. What the new requirement is not only do they have to cover benefits, but there has to be parity. So you can't, as a carrier, provide benefits that are sort of less substantive or comprehensive on the mental health side as you do on the physical health side.
Matt in Baltimore, our next caller. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi, this is Pat.
Oh, Pat. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Happy New Year to you both.
Thank you.
Question for Carolyn, please. My wife and I qualified for and were signed up for Medicaid last year. In mid-December, I took a look at the website, just curious to see how it looked compared to last year. And one of the things that I noted was that if you're on Medicaid. Did I say Medicare earlier? It's Medicaid.
Medicaid.
Yeah. The one thing I noted on the website was that if you're on Medicaid, you'll be contacted. And since I read that, I've been a little curious as to why I haven't been contacted and whether or not there's any call to action that I should be looking forward to taking.
Yes. Hi, Matt. Thank you for the question.
Pat, he said.
Oh, Pat.
We had it wrong. Sorry.
We'll do it again. You will be contacted. What we're doing is we're waiting until the end of open enrollment to begin to contact folks to have them come back and get a redetermination of their eligibility for Medicaid. So we wanted to make sure that everything was sort of done in an orderly fashion, and we're so focused on getting new people in by the 15th of February that we're going to start the redeterminations in Medicaid in March.
I have a question about rates.
Mm-hmm.
CareFirst, if CareFirst is still getting 80%, a high percentage of the enrollees in Maryland,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what that indicates. People like the name. They're drawn to CareFirst. They offer a better policy. I don't know. But it would seem to me that they're in the driver's seat in terms of rates next time. That as competitive as the field looks on the exchange, maybe it's not really.
Well, I think, you know, one thing to really remember about all this is that it's still very new. And everyone's still feeling their way, and it's going to take a while to kind of have it all shake out and reach its sort of stable state. And so I think, you know, we're seeing more movement this year than last year in terms of you know, different behaviors with enrollees signing up in plans.
Some people are looking beyond CareFirst.
Yeah. But you know, CareFirst is a great carrier and they have great plans and their rates are competitive and a strong brand, right? Yeah. And yet at the same time we have some, you know, we have the new co-op Evergreen, we have new entrant Cigna, we have Kaiser and United Health Group, AllSavers. I mean, I think one of the great advantages, and again, it'll take a while for this to kind of, you know, take hold. But for the first time, you really can compare. I mean, you know, it's sort of, you say it, oh, you can shop and compare on Maryland Health Connection, and you don't really think about what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it, you really can line up the plans and look at the benefits, look at the doctors, look at the rates, look at the deductibles and coinsurance, a lot of factors that you can compare and really choose the best one for your family.
It's possible that actually folks using the exchange have more choices than those of us who are insured through our employers.
In some cases, yeah, it just depends, obviously, on what your employer offers.
Greg writes in to say that I'm a supporter of the ACA because it's good for the country. But as a freelance writer, I have my own insurance. For years, I had Aetna and was very happy with the coverage. Even flu shots were free. Then I got dropped because Aetna and the state could not reach an agreement. Our broker, through the exchange, was able to get us similar coverage through CareFirst Blue Cross, but my monthly premium went from $111 to $245 per month. For me, not very affordable.
Well, I would encourage Greg, yes, to, again, going back to the last point, to really shop and compare and ensure that this time around, was he talking about the plan he got last year?
He's talking about, I guess, I can't tell. I think he means this year. Greg, if you want to clarify that for us, maybe. But anyway,
but in any event,
You're saying maybe he should look beyond Care First.
Well, he should just look at all the plans that are available, make sure that he has applied for and determined whether or not he qualifies for any financial assistance. Then if he's done all that and still not satisfied, there's next year. There are pluses and minuses to any change, and I think you have to look at overall the benefit that we're getting as individuals and families across the state as
well.
Would you
question whether his plan, the Aetna plan, was as good as the plan he has now, or inferior to it? Would you wonder about that?
I mean, I have no idea what the Aetna plan he had.
I ask because I've heard people say, well, you were underinsured, meaning you think your plan was great, but really it wasn't that great. The premium might have been good, but the plan wasn't that comprehensive.
Well, going back to the point we talked about at the beginning of the hour, if the Aetna plan was January 1st, 2014, it may not have had the comprehensive coverage that we've talked about and providing preventive services at no cost and all of those benefits, mental health benefits, as one caller pointed out.
Greg also mentioned using a broker and going through the exchange. Ron in Oxford on the Eastern Shore had a comment about that or a question. Hello, Ron. Welcome to Midday.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Yeah, same thing. I've used a broker for 10 years, and it's great getting the explanation from them as to what we should have. And that was referred from Care First, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't the website allow that option or refer it?
You mean by listing brokers?
Yeah.
That's one of the nice things about the new system this year is there's a broker search function. So what you can do is go to the website and plug in your zip code and find a list of brokers who are authorized to work with the exchange and to sell plans on the exchange in your particular area.
What does the broker get out of that?
The brokers have the same relationships and compensation agreements with the carriers always did.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't cost us anymore.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I get you. Maybe it does indirectly, I only ask because I personally have never used a broker for health insurance, but for other forms of insurance. And we've got two people here who say they see a benefit in it. Larry in Bel Air, welcome to Midday. Carolyn.
I would like to say that actually the brokers have been wonderful partners with us, and you're absolutely right. We've encouraged them to work with us because they've, for many, many years, they're in the business of explaining health insurance to people and helping them, and we really appreciate that.
Go ahead, Larry. Welcome to the show.
I'm in Harbor Tunnel. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounds good from there.
All right. Yeah. My son keeps complaining about his Aetna policy. Last year, he was paying $500 a month premium for a family with two young kids. It never covers what he needs. This year, he got a letter. It's going to be covering less benefits. I don't think that how can we hold his employer and the insurance company that his employer has chosen, how can we hold them accountable? I don't think they're meeting ACA standards.
Hmm. And is this in Maryland?
Yes, it's in Maryland. It's an Aetna policy. It's a Maryland company. And yeah, my son could go to the exchange. And he's also quoted Blue Cross Blue Shield, and he'd have to pay $1,200 a month for Blue Cross Blue Shield. And right now he's paying $600 a month for the premium and $600 a month out of pocket because he has some special things that he needs for his children. And I don't think that this employer is meeting ACA standards.
Hmm.
Well, if you know, your son has an actual complaint about the insurance coverage itself, that, you know, he can file a complaint with the Maryland Insurance Administration, and it's the Insurance Administration that regulates the carriers in that regard. In terms of, you know, having more choice, the way the ACA was set up is, you know, your son or anyone can come to the exchange and purchase a plan. But if someone is offered insurance that meets certain requirements by the employer, then what they can't do is come and get a subsidy, a tax subsidy on the exchange. So he would have to look and see whether or not it's possible that the employer's coverage doesn't meet these requirements, and the two requirements have to do with the benefits covered and the affordability. So the insurance coverage has to be below a certain threshold of cost for the employee, and if it doesn't meet that requirement, then they can come to the exchange and get a subsidy.
Speaking of employers, what's going on with employers in Maryland? Those with 50 or more, those with 50 or less. Are they encouraging their workers who aren't insured to go to the exchange? How is that working out?
Well, you know, the part of the Affordable Care Act was to set up an exchange specifically for small employers called the SHOP Exchange. And we have what we call a SHOP Direct Enrollment Plan here in Maryland, and we're standing up another aspect of that called Employee Choice as of this month. And so what that means is small employers now can sort of take advantage of you know, the leverage of a large employer by kind of aggregating on this SHOP exchange. So small employers can offer insurance the way they have always offered it, which is to choose a carrier and offer that coverage to their employees, or now they will have a new option as of this month, whereby they can choose what's called a meta level, and what it means is sort of the actuarial value of a plan. And there are four meta levels on all plans now: bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And what it really means is, for example, the bronze plan, that means that the plan pays 60% of your costs and you end up paying 40% of your costs. So now employers can, instead of choosing one carrier and making that decision on behalf of all of his or her employees, can choose a metal level and say, okay, I'm going to offer a silver plan, a plan that pays 70% of my employees' costs to my employees, and they can choose whatever the carrier they want. And so that's a really nice option for small
employers. The employer sets the standard, chooses chooses the level that they want, and then there's multiple plans under that.
Right, exactly.
So someone working for that small company still has as many choices as anyone else, a freelance writer, or anyone coming off the street for insurance.
Right, exactly. Okay. And the other point to make there is small employers also for under 25 employees can get a tax credit for the first 2 years that they offer insurance.
Carolyn Quatrochi, please tell us about the February 15th deadline. What does this mean for those listening right now who either don't have insurance yet or got a letter saying that they were underinsured and they needed to find a new plan and haven't acted? What's the importance of February 15th?
Yes, I'm very glad you asked that because it is incredibly important. It's the end of what we call open enrollment, and that means the period whereby people can sign up for insurance. So anyone who doesn't have insurance now or thinks they may want a different plan, you need to sign up by February 15th in order to get coverage for 2015. If you don't, you'll have to wait until next year. Unless, and this is another point that people should know this, if for whatever reason they miss that deadline and have what's called a life event, or even if they already have insurance coverage but have one of these life events, they can come back and get a different plan. And by a life event, I mean something like having a baby, getting married, getting divorced, that kind of thing.
And for folks who are sort of resisting, dragging their feet or whatever, didn't like the ACA to begin with, don't like the mandatory insurance, don't like being forced into things, there is a tax consequence that gets more serious as time goes on, right?
Yes. In this first year, this past year, the penalty is 1% of your income or $95, whichever is greater. For 2015, that goes up to 2% or $325, I believe, and then, you know, up to 695 and 2.5% for 2016. So I would encourage people for that reason to, and you know, not to wait till February 15th. We do expect a surge, you know, because human nature being what it is, people will procrastinate. But I would encourage listeners out there to come earlier rather than waiting till February 15th. But as I said, going back to a point I made before, the tax penalty is real, and it's a good reason. You know, why pay a penalty and get no insurance where you can, you know, pay, pony up your own money and actually have something to show for it. But the real reason to do it is that you just never know, even if you're young and think you're healthy and expect to be healthy for many more years, you just never know. I broke my leg a couple of years ago suddenly and all of a sudden had, you know, thousands of dollars in bills that would have been catastrophic had I not had insurance.
Carolyn Kotrocki, Executive Director of the Maryland Health Benefits Exchange, the Maryland Health Connection, thank you for being here today. MarylandHealthConnection.gov, that's where you go if you want to enroll and get some information about health insurance. So thank you very much for being here.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we'll hear more about the ACA, the latest challenges to it in Congress and before the Supreme Court. Jay Hancock from Kaiser Health News will be joining us after this short break on Midday. Welcome back to Midday. As I mentioned at the top of the show, of course, Congress back in session this week. The Republicans already making efforts toward repealing the Affordable Care Act with a bill on the docket that would change the definition of a full-time worker under the ACA. That's one thing that's there. And, of course, Speaker of the House John Boehner supports repeal of the law. Also, something came up in November, December, that we found out the Supreme Court was going to consider a case that again, threatens a major element of the Affordable Care Act. And in March, the court will actually hear arguments on this case known as King versus Burwell. By the way, Carolyn Kotrocki did not have to rush out to a luncheon meeting, so she's in the studio with us, Executive Director of the Maryland Health Benefits Exchange. And now we're joined, Carolyn, by Jay Hancock, my former colleague at the Baltimore Sun, who's been with the Kaiser Health News now for a couple of years. Jay, welcome back to the show. Nice to hear from you.
Hello, Dan. Nice to be here.
And Carolyn's in the studio with us. So let's talk about King versus Burwell. Jay, we got to just explain this to our listeners a little bit first.
Okay. This is the second challenge to the Affordable Care Act before the Supreme Court in the last few years. And this challenge looks like what this looks like is that when Congress drafted the law, they created these tax credits that Carolyn was just talking about that people can get to help them pay for health insurance bought through the ACA exchanges like the one she's running. And when drafting the law, Congress made explicit reference to tax credits being made available for exchanges established by the state, like the one in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
What the law does not contain is any explicit reference to tax credits for exchanges established by the federal government, which, as you know, is the exchange healthcare.gov, which serves most states. Most states did not set up their own exchange like Maryland did. And so opponents of the health law have challenged it on the basis that, you know, look, this law doesn't come right out and say that there are subsidies for people buying on healthcare.gov. And so it is what the IRS has ruled that in a agency ruling, the IRS has said that, yes, of course there are subsidies on the federal exchange. That's what Congress intended. Opponents are saying, well, it's not in the law, and so the IRS ruling is invalid, and in fact there should be no subsidies for healthcare.gov. And as you point out, that's a fundamental support of the law, and if the Supreme Court rules overturns King v. Burwell, the Fourth Circuit upheld the IRS's interpretation. If the Supreme Court overturns that, then it takes away a major pillar underneath the law.
When I first read about this, Carolyn, you might want to comment on it. I thought this is kind of shocking that the Supreme Court would take a case that basically turns on three or four words in this massive document known as the Affordable Care Act that affects 34 states. And now, Jay, apparently something like 4 million people, too. There's some 4 million people getting tax credits or subsidies through these federal exchanges in those 34 states.
Correct.
Because that would be, I mean, this would be very upsetting for the Supreme Court to find that the law does not cover federal exchanges. Carolyn, you're just shaking your head. Maryland is one of the states that opted to have its own exchange. So I guess you just wonder, what are you wondering about when you hear this? Why is there another attack on the ACA?
It would not affect us directly, as you point out, since we're a state-based exchange. But as Jay says, it would undercut the law substantially. And, you know, without getting into the legal niceties of the argument, and I think the legal community was rather stunned when this you know theory got legs. But, I really believe that it would be, I'm very hopeful, if only because, you know, there are millions and millions of people across the country now that have insurance for the first time, that never had it before. And it's hard to imagine a court, a Congress, anyone sort of walking that back and taking that away from people.
Even John Roberts.
Well, I have not followed closely the legal arguments, but I'm hopeful.
Hey, Jay, I mean, I think Carolyn's right. A lot of folks were shocked that this case got into the Supreme Court, especially after it had upheld 5-4 2 years ago, going on 3 years ago soon, major provisions of the ACA.
Right, right. We should note that it only takes a minority of justices. I think it's 4 to grant cert and hear one of these cases. And so the fact that they've agreed to hear it, you know, is not by any means a guarantee that they will rule one way or the other. It's almost, I mean, the legal arguments are what the legal arguments are. They hinge on precedents and the authority of an agency to make a ruling in the face of ambiguity in the statute. But what it comes down to, as you mentioned, is Justice Roberts. He was the key vote in the previous challenge to the law for the individual mandate, and he's the key vote here. And so everybody's focusing on him, and it may be in the previous ruling, that his chain of reasoning for acting one way or the other is something that almost nobody anticipated, which is what happened 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago now, in the previous challenge. So we'll see. But as Carolyn said, it's this would be a huge, you know, close to fatal blow for the law. If you take away the subsidies, you take away, you know, one of the previous challenge to the law was the individual mandate, right?
Mm-hmm.
The penalties that we just talked about that you get hit with if you don't have a certain level of coverage. If there is no individual mandate, you don't have enough people in the marketplace to make it sustainable and continuing. You've got to have healthy people as well as sick people who are naturally inclined to buy their own coverage. If the subsidies goes away, the individual mandate goes away for a large majority of individuals, because there's an out in the individual mandate requirement if the coverage that's available is not affordable. And if the subsidies go away, the coverage will not be affordable for large numbers of consumers in these healthcare.gov states. And if the subsidies go away, the employer mandate also goes away, because the employer penalties, remember, employers of 50 or more workers get penalized also if they don't offer qualified coverage to their workers. That also is a tax penalty. However, it's triggered by their employees receiving subsidies as individuals on healthcare.gov or the other exchanges.
Right.
So if there are no subsidies on healthcare.gov, there aren't any employer penalties either. So that plank gets pulled out also. Mm. So it's a big threat.
Frank has a good email here with questions that are a little rhetorical, but also good questions. He says, of great concern of the Supreme Court case is the rule of unintended consequences, or maybe in the case of the people bringing this case, the plaintiff's intended consequences. If subsidies are ruled unconstitutional for those states that do not have an exchange, like Maryland, what will be the effect on the insurance market in those states? Early reports mentioned the possibility of the complete collapse of the insurance market in those states, with a ripple effect on the states that do have an exchange. For repealers, those who favor repeal, will this become a case of be careful what you wish for, you just might get it?
Well, those are a couple really good points. He brings up the third threat to the Affordable Care Act represented by this case, which is that once the individual mandate is gone and once the means for people to buy these policies go away, i.e. the subsidies, then that creates what the insurance companies call adverse selection, which is been a problem for decades in the commercial insurance market. And what it means is if you're sick, you buy an insurance policy, and if you're not, you don't. And that tends to drive up costs per member, which drives up premiums and makes markets and insurance policies increasingly unaffordable. That's another very likely outcome that would happen if the plaintiffs in King v. Burwell prevail.
Hey, listen, we're short of time, Jay, but I've been dying to ask you about this repeal. We now have the House and the Senate controlled by Republicans. Who knows what happens in 2016? Who knows what happens in the Supreme Court case? But then looking beyond that, you know, if you have a Republican president in 2016, 2017, do we see repeal possible of the ACA? Could that happen with so many people getting insurance through it?
Well, repeal is the rallying cry. It's unclear what that would look like, and it's also clear there will be no repeal as long as or anything even close to it, as long as Obama is president. The White House is even threatening to veto this bill that you mentioned earlier, which would increase the ACA relevant work week from 30 hours a week to 40 hours a week.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm looking beyond it, you know, with
exactly.
The possibility of a Republican president.
It's hugely difficult. Once these programs are in place, once people have signed up and are getting benefits, they start to receive, they start to build political capital. And even though Obamacare under that name is still very unpopular in the nation, the individual pieces of Obamacare, many of the pieces, are quite popular. And would be a very interesting political mix in 2017 if a Republican-controlled White House and Congress were to revisit this and try to do it. Their political problem is that they don't want to look like they're fixing Obamacare because, you know, that plays into the Democratic narrative. On the other hand, they don't want to take away some of these aspects of the program, which are actually very popular.
If that
plays out, it'll be really interesting.
Yeah. Let's hear quickly from Carolyn on that.
Yes, I'm just very hopeful for the same reasons that Jay is articulating. You can't take away the popular pieces. I mean, you can't keep the popular pieces and take away the other part. It's all of a piece. So, mm-hmm. For example, everyone's so glad now that you can't be turned away if you're sick.
Pre-existing
conditions.
Yeah.
But you can't keep that and not have the whole structure remain in place.
Carolyn Quatrochi, again, Executive Director of the Maryland Health Benefits Exchange. Thanks for being here. And, Jay, nice to have you back on the show. We really appreciate your explanations of this. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Yep.
Enjoyed it.
Okay. Jay Hancock from Kaiser Health News. Thank you, folks, for tuning into our first hour of midday today. We take a break for lunch, and then we have the second hour of our show coming up after the news from NPR. So please stay tuned.